micro nano education for everyone.
I wanted to introduce the speakers today. We've got awesome presenters, and they've actually got really cool opportunities that you can apply for. They've got undergraduate research experiences at UC San Diego that we would love for students here to submit an application to. They do nanotechnology research. Her name's Dr. Lisa Poulikakos, and I apologize if that's wrong. Pronunciation. And then the other one is our awesome mentor, Paula Correa, who went to Pasadena City College. She's going to talk a little bit about what she does at UC San Diego, but also hopefully a little about what she did at Pasadena City College. So thanks for presenting, and we look forward to hearing what you guys are going to be talking about.
Hi, everyone. Well, thank you so much, Jared, for the really nice introduction, and to everyone for having us here today. We're really excited to be here and to have the chance to share our research with you, hopefully get some people even more excited and inspired by nanotechnology. And as Jared mentioned, we'd also like to tell you about some really exciting summer research opportunities at UCSD that you can apply for as well. Cool. Well, thanks so much for having us. We're really excited to have the opportunity to talk to you today about our research and opportunities at UC San Diego. So my name is Lisa Poulikakos, and my lab researches nanophotonics for global health. So we'll tell you all about more what that means. We're in the mechanical and aerospace engineering department at UCSD. Great. So a little bit about me. So I'm American and Swiss. I was born in the US, but grew up most of my life in Switzerland. A little bit about my academic trajectory. So I studied mechanical engineering at ETH Zurich. That's an engineering university in Switzerland. In my master's, I had the chance to do some research at MIT on quantum dots, which are these really exciting nanomaterials that you find a lot of times in your TVs from Samsung, for example. And then after my PhD, which I did in Switzerland at ETH Zurich, I spent 2 years at Stanford as a postdoctoral researcher. And in 2020, I joined the faculty of UC San Diego, and I'm excited to be here. So a little bit about me outside of the lab. I'm really interested in science and art and the connection between the two. I think, you know, sometimes artists have a really exciting way to see the world. And as a scientist that thinks about light a lot, I think, you know, painters also have a really cool perspective on that. I'm really excited about scientific outreach. So here you can see some images from an outreach event I did back in Switzerland for high school students from across the country. And I also love the outdoors. So here you can see one of my favorite mountains in Switzerland, the Matterhorn, which was a fun place to go in the winter back when I was living there. Now Paula will introduce herself and tell us a little about her exciting background and give us an intro to the slides. And then I'll take over after that.
Okay, so hi, everyone. I haven't really gotten a chance to talk to a lot of you, and you probably don't know much about me. So first of all, I'm Paula Curia. My interests include dancing, hiking, and reading, but honestly, I spend most of my time studying now. My past work includes from Pasadena City College, PCC, and Penn State. So at PCC for just over 2 years, I think, I was working with Dr. Ashcroft, and a lot of the work is like convoluted in the butterfly paper we made and submitted for the Journal of Society for Information Display. And also I got the opportunity, especially because of the research I did over at PCC, to work at Penn State in this lab that was working with squid brain teeth proteins to develop a self-healing composite material. And over there, I got to explore like the field of bioengineering more and helped me decide to explore bioengineering as a major. So I highly suggest, like, if you can do an RE, like, definitely try and sign up. You can learn a lot more about your research interests. I also had a lot of opportunities to present a lot of conferences. So that picture there is me at the Posters of the Hill conference at Washington, D.C., and it was a very enlightening experience. I got to meet other undergrads who were also transfer students at some point or went to community college, and the research they were doing and the research they'd like to do in the future. So also conferences are really great and fun opportunity to do as an undergrad. Currently at UCSD, I joined the Poulikakos lab this summer. And over here, I perform polarized light microscopy experiments, basically analyzing samples under polarized light and their corresponding spectral responses. And I interpret these spectral responses and the color productions with the softwares MATLAB and Mathematica. And yeah, that's pretty much what I've got going on right now. Here's like an overview of UCSD. I know a lot of you are applying for transfer. I don't know if like the whole submission process ended for those applications, but like, doesn't it look great? You know, the beach, all the buildings. So you definitely consider coming here. Okay, engineering explores a lot of different problems and systems, like the production of biomaterials, studying biomechanics, fluidics, heat transfer, mass transfer, and the development of medical devices. But with nanophotonic materials, we can study these systems at the nanoscale, and this provides a lot of potential advantages. So an example of nanophotonics in nature that I'm sure a lot of you heard of last week from Dr. Oesker is the blue morpho butterfly. So the blue morpho butterfly, like a lot of different insects and animals, benefit from this the process of sexual selection, in which certain sexes will try to acquire a mate by producing brilliant, bright colors that make them a more captivating partner. So somehow the blue morpho butterfly evolved over time to develop these complex nanostructures that interact with light to provide these brilliant blue colors under different incidences of light that make them more appealing to their female partners. So here's an example of these nanostructures. So they're very periodically arranged and disordered, which makes them a very interesting natural application of this process. So as I described before, these butterfly scales interact strongly with visible light, but there's other processes, including that they're chemically selective. So also in my favor, they respond differently to different materials and environments. So like, for example, if you put them under solutions of different refractive indices, you'll see a different color production. And that's because light is bending at different wavelengths, depending on the solution. Another interesting property is anisotropy. So basically, the geometry of including this morpho butterfly, it differs throughout the wing. So depending on where light is hitting, so how you, the incidence of the light or the orientation of the wing, you'll see a different color or reflection response depending on the orientation. So currently in the field of nanophotonics, applications like lensing and cloaking, so like Harry Potter, the development of high-resolution pixels have been used through this process. But the problem is a lot of times with optics research is the scale in which it's conducted. So with nanophotonics, you don't have to worry about all these lasers and these lenses on these large scales. You can scale it down to a larger like millimeters squared and produce these small structures which have a wider range of applications. And this is what makes it such a great possible applications for healthcare opportunities. So I know a lot of you are like studying biology. And if you take like O-chem, you like know about the different orientations of molecules, so they can have the same composition, but depending on how these atoms or molecules are arranged, they can have different properties. So another demonstration of anisotropy is actually in tissues. So tissues, often like containing of collagen, can be aligned along a certain axis, but be oriented differently. And this corresponds to different mechanical properties. So potential structural anomalies in tissues can provide a potential biomarker, basically, for disease diagnosis and treatment. However, current healthcare lacks the mobile technology necessary to probe these structural anisotropies at the point of care. But if we use light, which is versatile and non-invasive, we have the potential to probe the structural anisotropies. So how exactly do we develop these advanced optical technologies for healthcare Well, Dr. Poulikakis will tell you.
Thanks so much, Paula. Sounds great. Well, you know, as Paula very nicely introduced, there are many things we can do with these nano-optical materials. You know, some of our work has used them on the molecular scale for disease diagnosis and treatment, trying to figure out what the structural properties of the molecules are in highly sensitive detectors. And then some recent work that I'll talk to you a little bit more about is using these nanostructures or nanostructured surfaces for tissue diagnostics. So how can we tell the structural properties of the tissue by illuminating the sample with light? And one of the problems we'd like to address with this is, for example, if we look at breast cancer diagnostics as a test case. In breast cancer diagnostics, doctors and patients face trade-offs in precision, cost, and time when diagnosing the disease. So either they can follow a morphological approach, which is rapid and low cost, and they look at basically stained tissue sections, and they figure out certain morphological features in the arrangement of the cell nuclei and the extracellular matrix. But because this technique is quite subjective and lacks precision, it can have dangerous consequences for patients. And on the other hand, recent progress in biochemistry has given rise to highly precise diagnostic techniques with markers at the molecular or genetic scale. But these assessment strategies take much, much longer to complete, and they also skyrocket in cost, so they're not accessible to all patients in need. So how can we address this challenge and really bridge the gap to obtain a rapid, precise, and low-cost diagnostic technology? So we'd like to really improve the state of the art with this goal. So to better answer these questions, let's take a little closer look at what's happening in the tumor microenvironment in breast cancer. So as Paula very nicely explained, we know that collagen is the most abundant ordered structural protein in the human body. So you can see here, it has a highly uniaxial arrangement. And recent research has found that this is actually closely related to the presence and orientation of collagen fibers in the tumor microenvironment can tell us very precise information on a patient's susceptibility to treatments, for instance, when the collagen fibers are very dense. But it can also tell us, for instance, about the stage of the cancer. So when the fibers, the collagen fibers, are tangentially aligned around tumor margins, they indicate a non-invasive early stage cancer. But then their radial outward face alignment indicates a metastasized advanced stage cancer. So researchers have developed a variety of powerful techniques to selectively visualize collagen fibers in biological tissue and help us better understand its role in disease progression. So one example for this is second harmonic generation microscopy, which you can see here, where the fibers are, where you can basically in this image visualize collagen fibers at a tumor margin. And you can see in this image, they're outward aligned. So while this method is very useful, it allows a rapid and precise assessment of the structural properties of the tissue. It has a very high cost and experimental complexity, which hinders translation to the clinic. On the other hand, simpler techniques which are more clinically accessible, such as polarized light microscopy, where a tissue sample is placed between cross polarizers, can provide a rapid and low-cost assessment, but it's qualitative and lacks precision. So again, we'd like to figure out a way to use optical science to bridge this gap and develop a rapid, precise, and low-cost diagnostic technology. And to address this goal, we're leveraging the really exciting and versatile tools of nanophotonics or nano-optical materials. So our envisioned experimental workflow looks a little bit like this. So we have basically a nanopattern surface, which is a lot like a microscope cover slip that's typically used today, which we pattern with engineered nanostructures. Then following routine pathological procedure, we basically place biopsied tissue sections, just like doctors are used to preparing today, on top of our nanostructured surface. We then functionalize the system, as you can see here. And importantly, we can then visualize its properties in a simple optical microscope, which is available in any medical setting. And importantly, the light, the interaction between light, the tissue, and our nanostructure will give rise to distinct color responses. So depending on the presence and orientation of fibers in the tumor microenvironment, we get a very quantitative color response that can tell us about the disease stage. So how can we now design a nanophotonic surface that can reach these goals? For this, we can build and expand on some really exciting work that's been done in the field of so-called colorimetric metasurfaces. So nanostructured surfaces that are designed to generate colors in a distinct way. Some examples are shown here for so-called plasmonic metasurfaces, which are made of metal nanoparticles, where these tiny nanostructured crosses can change the color of light in this example here. Or also these resonance structures can give you a very distinct color-based response when excited with light. Another material platform that's very interesting for colorimetric effects are dielectrics. So dielectric nanostructures can either have these cross shapes shown here, or phenomena that we're building and expanding on are so-called guided mode resonances, where we have a glass substrate that we nano-pattern with a dielectric such as silicon nitride to get high color purity responses. So how do we quantify the colors that we observe from our nanostructures? For that, we can use color theory, and in particular, so-called CIE colorimetry. So this tells us a little bit about how our human eye can receive color. So sometimes we would measure a color response in the lab and we get a wavelength-dependent spectrum, but that doesn't necessarily tell us about the color that our human eye perceives. So for that, we can use these so-called color matching functions where you see one is blue, one is green, and one is red. And the combination of the intensity that we measure from a detector with these nanostructures, with these spectra that you can see here, will give us basically the color response that we see in the human eye. And that can be plotted on this so-called chromaticity graph. So each point on this color chart represents a given color response, which is the convolution or the integral combination, as you see here, with each of these color matching functions and a measurement of a spectral response. So it basically tells us it correlates the optics or spectra that we measure in the lab with the color that the human eye can perceive. So based on this theory, we can design a nanostructured surface where you can see an example here. So basically, we have here our glass substrate, and we have a silicon nitride layer on top, which is a specially chosen dielectric. Now, if we send white light onto this nanopatterned surface, just like you do in a regular microscope, in an air environment, we'll see a red color response. Then in a green environment, in an isotropic, healthy tissue environment, we'll see a green color response. And then finally, we'll see a blue color response if we have fibrous tissue in the system. So the fibrous properties of the tissue will really change our color response. We can further quantify this, as you can see, in some further simulations where in this plot, for instance, you can see how this quantity tells us how easily the human eye can distinguish colors. So as we increase the fiber content of our tissue, you'll see that we'll get a color response which the human eye can distinguish differently as we increase the fiber intensity. So that shows that we have a really quantitative marker of the structural properties of the tumor tissue. So after doing numerical simulations, we'd like to also fabricate this in the lab. So here you can see some examples of these nano-optical surfaces, which you can see here as scanning electron micrograph images that we can pattern in our clean room at UCSD. And here you can see what they look like in an electron micrograph. But this is also an example of what our structures look like in an optical microscope. So the electron microscope has a very high resolution. So we have here 2 micron scale bar. But if we look at our nanostructures in the light microscope, you can see we can vary the color response by changing the structural properties of our nanosystem. And if we then would apply our nanostructure to a realistic case of breast cancer diagnostics, you can see on the top row the types of color responses that we would visualize with polarized light microscopy and the completely different color response that we would see for our nanostructure. So the features that distinguish an early stage localized cancer on the left and a late stage metastasized cancer on the right are much more clearly distinguishable with our nanostructure technology. So this is a really exciting step forward because in comparison to existing techniques such as so-called H&E staining, where we selectively stain the tissue for morphological features that gives us a qualitative subjective analysis, or more complex techniques like the second harmonic generation microscopy, which is quantitative but not clinically compatible, this shows us that our nanostructured systems offer a really exciting route toward rapid, precise, and low-cost breast cancer diagnostics. if we then move beyond the example case of breast cancer diagnostics, we see that this is just the beginning. Because if we look at the human body, we find that 1/3 of deaths worldwide can be attributed to some form of organ fibrosis. And indeed, organ fibrosis can not only affect cancers such as breast cancer, but also many kinds of diseases, including fibrosis in the intestine, the retina, the liver, or the brain, for instance, in early onset Alzheimer's. So the opportunities of these technologies are really endless. And we're particularly excited about the opportunities that these nanostructured metasurfaces provide because, our technology really leverages light as a probe that's non-invasive of the structural properties of the tissue. So because we leverage light in this distinct way, it offers a translatability across diseases and across organs of the human body, which is not possible with existing biochemical probes. And we hope that this will open the opportunity to a variety of really exciting applications in pathology, drug screening, endoscopy, and so on, that can really make a positive difference in clinical and biomedical imaging. And with that, we come to the end of the research part of our talk. I'll still come to some really cool outreach activities. But first, I'd like to basically thank you for your attention and for having us today. And to all of my wonderful students who you can see here, including Paula, we're so excited to have her in the group, really fortunate as well. So thanks so much for that. If you'd like, I'll present also some really cool outreach opportunities at UCSD and then open the floor to questions. So at UCSD, we have a really wonderful materials research center, which is funded by the NSF called the MRSEC. You have here a QR code if you want to go directly to the link to some of our summer opportunities. And I think Dr. Ashcroft also shared some flyers with you as well. I'll tell you a little bit about the MRSEC. It's a really great center for materials research. So as Paula showed you, it's an opportunity to apply for some of our summer programs and spend the summer at the beautiful beaches of San Diego. I mean, that sounds pretty cool to me, I would say. So we'd definitely love for you to apply. Here you see some of the summer program students on a beautiful hike, which is right next to the UCSD campus. So these RIMSC, so Research Emergent and Materials Science Engineering programs, they're basically intensive 8-week workshops, and they're for high school, undergrad, and grad students, postdocs, or international scholars. The deadline is in May, so you can find out more about the application right here, and it'll be from June 19th to August 14th, 2022. And you'll have so many really fun opportunities there. It's basically immersive. But yeah, there's lots of really awesome opportunities there. It's immersive. You'll be able to learn all about research and other really cool activities. So you can see here a little more information about these summer immersive programs. So as you can see, there are all kinds of groups that are eligible for this, K-12, visiting faculty, industry researchers, high school students, transfer students entering UCSD, RU partners. So yeah, we'd really love to have also prospective transfer students. It's a great way to get to know the environment. There's 3 different topics. One is silicon nanotechnology. One is on predictive assembly, and one is on engineered living materials. So on the website, you can also learn all about these topics in more detail. So in addition to these summer programs, we also have research experience for undergraduates. Some of you may have heard of that. It's one of the programs that Paula did at Penn State. So opportunities like that are a really wonderful way to really dive into research during your undergraduate experience. I think this year's application deadline has already passed, but if you want to keep this in mind for future summers and do an REU at UCSD, I think it's a great opportunity. And the MRSEC offers a specific REU program where you'll have a chance to interact with lots of other engineering researchers. So next to doing great things in the lab, hands-on training, you'll have conference presentations and then also team building. And the team building activities in San Diego are, of course, especially fun because we're right by the beach. You'll also have a stipend as well. Lots of weekly seminars and activities that'll be a really wonderful learning experience. Yeah, and here you can see a list of all of the different MRSEC faculty and staff. So you can check out our research pages, see if there's some research groups that are really, especially you're excited about. We'd, of course, in our group, love to host some of you as well if you're interested. So don't hesitate to reach out. And then finally, a little more about the different research projects, the MRSEC. So there are 2 research branches, One is on predictive assembly. So what is that exactly? It's about computation-informed data materials design. So data-driven materials design. So how can you develop new materials with our latest progress in data science? And then the second option or second branch of the MRSIC is engineering living materials. So this allows leveraging synthetic biology approaches to materials fabrication and also, you know, different kinds of design rules for materials, so on. So these, for example, are biodegradable flip-flops that were made with some of these engineered materials. So that's pretty exciting. Here again is the QR code if you want to learn more about the summer opportunities and have an awesome summer at the beach when you're not in the lab as well. So yeah, I'd be happy to open the floor to any questions. And thanks so much, everyone.
All right, Professor, would you say that certain diseases have their own color responses? For example, respiratory diseases and or systems would have their own responses when it comes to the colors?
So that's a really good point. So we're basically looking at the structural properties of the materials. So for instance, if they have a collagen alignment, so there are multiple diseases that would have the same kind of collagen and it would align in the same way. So it's something that you could see across diseases. So I would imagine you can see similar structural properties across the diseases. So it's as if, so I know college, there are a lot of people with a biology background. If you have, for example, a specific biochemical stain that you mark for collagen, then it's kind of similar to that. So we would see the same marker across diseases. So it's kind of translatable, but the symptoms of the disease are different. So if you see fibrosis in the lung, it would mean something different than if you see fibrosis in the liver or a different part of the body.
Gotcha. And one more question. Would a different stage of, let's say, breast cancer have different color responses?
So there, yes, the color response changes because as breast cancer progresses, the fiber alignment in the tumor microenvironment will change too. So basically for an early stage cancer, the fibers would be aligned tangentially. And then for a late stage cancer, it would align in an outward fashion.
Mm. Okay, one last question, I promise. When it comes to like artificial organs, can your research be applied to it? Because, you know, sometimes you'll have these organs and, you know, they're not a good match or they are.
Well, Harold, you're totally on the right track. Yeah. So we're actually looking into organoids and organs and ways that we could visualize that as well. So that's something we're really excited about. Yeah. Thanks for your great
question. Right on. Thank you.
One thing I want to say to the students is, you know, if you want to use the Mint Kern stipend and go to UC San Diego for a week or two, we've actually got Paula's there, Sophia Barber's there, two of our mentors. And, you know, we could create sort of a you know, 2-week experience where you could get to know UC San Diego and the area. And then, you know, maybe what happens at that would then translate into the next year applying for the MRSEC program and longer experience in the future. So if you are interested, you know, put that in your, you know, whenever you fill out this survey and we'll work with UC San Diego to try and make something happen. So I think that would be a really cool thing to do.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Thanks so much to Dr. Ashcroft for sharing that. That's another great way to interact with DCSD and we'd also be more than happy to host some of you if you're interested for kind of a shorter 2-week experience. And that's a great way to get started. And you can always then come back for a longer summer program with the MRSEC in subsequent years too. And we already have some really cool projects in mind that we could work on with you too.
Our lab is also aggressively friendly. So we like when people come in. So like if you want a tour, like if you want to get ice cream, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, we love doing ice cream socials. So we'd love to welcome you. Definitely keep us posted. Here you can see us at one of our ice cream socials recently. So some pretty good ice cream.
I saw a note in the last slide that you're associated with the Dion lab at Stanford. How does that work? I saw her at a Nano Grantees meeting a couple years ago.
Oh, awesome.
I've seen her speak once, but I'd like to hear a little bit more.
Yeah, I did my postdoc in her lab. Yeah, so she's one of my mentors and a great role model. So I definitely learned a lot from her.
I was actually more curious about if you had done full animal work with this, scans looking at tumors and various tissues and things. So I know they've done it with like luciferase assays, how fireflies, if you don't know that, folks, how the, you know, the fireflies light up and they can tag certain kinds of tumors and see certain levels of this or that. But this is more along lines of, like you said, light reflection and collagen fibers. And I'm sure the animal work's done, but I was curious what kind of work.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So we actually last week started like moving in that direction, and we just teamed up with some collaborators in the pharmacology department who are experts in mouse models for breast cancer progression. So we're really excited kind of in the coming months to explore that further. So that's definitely something we're interested in. We have some ideas for in vivo models too, where we work with kind of optical biopsies and endoscopy to combine our systems with that for in vivo imaging.
I have a question, if it's okay. I was wondering, you do lab experimental work, but you started off designing the material. I think you said MATLAB and some other simulation tools. Are you continuing to evolve the design of the structure and doing more simulations there, or is there more work being done in the experimental side? How is that, how is your work divided between those?
Yeah, that's a great question. And also to kind of share the process of our research field. Every research field is different. In nanophotonics, it's really great because a lot of the material properties we can really model with the computer before we make them. So typically we use a finite element simulator like COMSOL multiphysics to really model and simulate the way that our nanostructure interacts with light and optimize it before we go to the clean room and really fabricate it. So that's our typical project workflow. But now we're actually working to build and expand on that. So one of my grad students is working on an algorithm to kind of algorithmically optimize the metasurface design. So it's tailored and tuned to respond ideally to a certain disease of interest. So that's definitely something we're excited about developing further.
What software do you use for vivo modeling? There was a question in chat.
So far the softwares we've been using are finite element simulation softwares that model the interaction with light with our nanomaterial, but they don't really model the in vivo behavior yet. But if you guys recommend a software that does that would be great to learn more about. So what we're mainly doing is we mimic the optical properties of the tissue within that software. So we reduce kind of the tissue to its fundamental material properties with respect to the way it interacts with light. So that's kind of the type of simulation that we do. Exactly. COMSOL is one of the ones that we use for that. COMSOL multiphysics. It's a finite element solver. People also use Lumerical. And then our data analysis is often in MATLAB or Mathematica. And Paul has also become an expert in many of these tools as well.
And can you, both of you say more about, for those more like cross-cutting skills, like learning MATLAB or finite element skills, like what other types of applications would like learning MATLAB be useful to or have been useful to you, Paula, and other research spaces?
So when I was at PCC, the class cut off, like, it was during COVID, like when it started and everyone left. But I took intro to MATLAB, and I know a lot of people who are engineering transfers have to take that class anyway. And it gives you like basically the MATLAB fundamentals. And also like when I transferred, I also had to take a class that was highly dependent on like numerical, like MATLAB simulations. But honestly, most of my coding knowledge is from like just doing it. And like, cause when I came to this lab, I was expected to work with like a lot of data and like produce like different like figures and analyses. And I literally just like Googled a lot and just like worked through the code. And I feel like everyone I've talked to, like engineering or otherwise, that's pretty much how they all end up getting their coding out. So I didn't like watch like tutorials or anything. I just like really went for it. And it wasn't even like, and I feel like when you're working through the code, like you learn faster rather than like depending entirely on an instructor, I guess.
Well, that's great. I mean, Paula's become really our, expert in data analysis and coding, and she's done such an amazing job. And I think it's really, don't be afraid of it. There's a lot of learning by doing too. And so it's definitely a very useful tool that's helpful in so many engineering projects.
there's also forums like honestly, if you ask a MATLAB question, mathematical question, Python question, whatever, they all typically have forums that address like certain like functions or like packets you need to use and everything. So like if you have a question, it's online, but also like go to class.
Yeah, I mean, and Paul has done some really awesome image analysis work. Some of the things she's done, like we had these complicated images we took in the lab, and Paula just figured out some really cool ways to just analyze it and assess the color response quantitatively, and that's been really great.
So in that approach, you use like the properties of collagen, right, to be able to distinguish, I don't know, it's not my area, so different patterns of light, right? So you're going to have different emissions, different wavelengths, and you're going to see that. Has this technology been adapted to look at other things other than collagen fibers in these tissues? Because I know you say that fibrosis is common across all these different cancers or diseases, but what about looking at other proteins that have a sort of really distinguishable, you know, emission spectra or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great point. So, you know, we're looking at the structural properties of light and upon interacting with the fibrous media, and basically, it depends. So we're looking at how the polarization of light changes. So it's not necessarily, collagen is the very common case, but it could also detect other fibrous media. So it's not kind of a molecular level scan, but any kind of fibrous structure. So even if you have amyloid fibers, early onset Alzheimer's disease or anything like that, we could detect by visualizing changes in the polarization of light. So anything you look at in polarized light microscopy, our method would allow you to see that in a more quantitative way, but also strongly enhanced.
Oh, thank you. I misunderstood. Yeah. So I suppose different fiber structural properties of tissues of different tumors are going to all have different spectra or whatever we're saying.
Different
quantitative data that you can gather. I see. Okay. Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. Great question.
It's almost makes me feel like we need to have like a follow-up presentation with, Paula teaching us how to model things on MATLAB.
Yeah. Oh man, that would MATLAB be, I want to take that class too. That would be awesome. And Mathematica too.
Yeah. Oh, Mathematica. Honestly, if you don't have to work with Mathematica, it's fine. You're all the better for it. I don't love it. A lot of people don't, but it's very useful in providing simulation and like functions that you just won't find in MATLAB. Like MATLAB is very universal around like engineering disciplines, but it is limiting. So Mathematica, especially when we're working with like color analysis, it's way more useful in like conducting like color differentiation functions and like simplifying it. But like the syntax of Mathematica is just not great for beginners. So it's a learning curve.
A bit of an access question, like Dominic, for you at CCP, Jared, for you at PCC, is MATLAB on the computers? Like, is that like a standard program you see around the campus, or at least in some labs on the campus?
I'll pipe up that for Ivy Tech, if you're in an engineering or engineering technology space, you will have access to MATLAB. It is pretty ubiquitous, but it's very specific to engineering over where we are.
And if I could jump in, NanoHub now provides MATLAB for free for anyone. So you can all log into NanoHub and get a MATLAB account.
There's also a web-based version. It's not quite as powerful. And it, depending on your internet, it can be a little laggy. But as long as you have a MathWorks account, then you don't have to have the software downloaded, and you can do a lot of the basics on there.
But to clarify, NanoHub provides the license for you for free, so you can all use it. We have that agreement, so you can use it in NanoHub. So this is something brand new that's newly made available.
Right. And thank you for clarifying that, Tanya. Does that involve them having the login to NanoHub?
Yes, that's a free login. You can log in with your Gmail account or make another account. You just log in with your free NanoHub account, and you can access MATLAB, the full version in NanoHub. We have a license agreement with them to provide this through NanoHub for free.
No, that's really awesome. I appreciate you clarifying that, because I didn't think it was free, and then for people who just may want to like dive in or who just might be feeling inspired right now before the inspiration leaves, give them a place to plug in and you know, just a place to play around and figure out what they can do.
Thank you so much for having us. It was wonderful.